The Adulting with ADHD podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. Please see a medical professional if you think you have ADHD or if you have questions about your current treatment. To support this podcast or to access the podcast archives, visit patreon.com/adultingwithADHD. This is the Adulting with ADHD podcast, self-empowerment for people with ADHD.
Today, I'm very excited to have with us therapist Nicoleta Borogiano. How are you doing today, Nicoleta?
Hi, Sarah. I'm doing really well. Thank you for catching up with me. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. I'm going to set up the episode a little bit because we're in a bit of a transition on the show. For the past year, we had been talking about ADHD and hormones. And the reason we were talking about it is because there just wasn't a lot of conversation or information out there. And I noticed the same was true about trauma and ADHD. And so that's how we ended up on the topic of trauma. Now, your background, I noticed, is in trauma in part. And we were going to talk today about adverse childhood experiences. And from my own conversations within the ADHD community, I know there's a huge need to understand trauma. And so that's where I'm coming from for the listeners. That's where we're going today with the show. So without further
ado,
I'm really excited about this opportunity. Do you want to get into a little bit of your background and how you came into this line of work?
Sure. Yeah. I'd love to. So as you mentioned, my name is Nicoleta Borogiano. I'm a psychologist, therapist, and educator, I consider myself now. And I currently worked with happiness seekers, I call them, that go into the journey of self-discovery, healing, and personal growth. Well, how I started, probably you want to know a little bit about my past, how I ended up in this kind of profession. I can say that I was always interested in this authentic human connection and in learning. Because I was brought up in my first 7 years of life by a very wise grandfather and a mystical grandmother. So naturally, they influenced my life a lot. And my mindset has been shaped in that kind of environment, very social, very altruistic, and very caring. It was a very caring environment. People would come to seek advice from my grandfather and some sort of healing and help from my grandmother. I think I felt since I was very young that I will one day be touching people's lives too. That was my kind of way of looking at future. And I keep saying it, that our first years of life are really, really important in how they shape us and how we develop. And I think my story is the proof, because when I was taken by my parents into the city and I was taken to school, I was exposed to domestic abuse and all sorts of other ways of looking at the traumatic events. And the fact that I had this stability, this secure attachment with my grandparents was really, really important. It was the foundation of my life. And that stability, I think, helped me somehow to cope with everything that happened in my life, naturally going through life as a human being. And it gave me the strength to really carry on. And somehow it informed my path and my work, my studies, everything I've done, my entire journey. So I've started with a clinical psychologist role in a palliative care hospital, working with the dying. It was a fantastic experience, obviously quite challenging, because most of the times the last person the people dying would speak with, and there was a lot of regrets there. There's been broken relationships, a lot of hurt, very little forgiveness for most of my patients, and so many dreams left unfulfilled. So for me, it was a very painful experience. It raised so many existential questions. I'll be honest, it put me on a path of serious spiritual awakening. So I transcended this medical model idea of working. I felt it was a bit limiting me. And I stepped out of the psychology world, everything that I knew really, and enrolled in psychotherapy training. And then I started my private practice, and I've studied psychotherapy and counseling for 10 years. I consider myself being a student, a seeker, always wanting to grow and develop and to understand really what's the cause of our suffering. So I wasn't sure if it's culturally conditioned. And I moved to London 15 years ago and I carry on studying there. I was very interested in difference, diversity, similarity, everything that is helping me to really understand the human nature and our life. So for the past 15 years I lived in London, and this is where I currently work with my happiness seekers that struggle in relationships, that maybe have a traumatic past themselves, that struggle with addiction, depression, anxiety, and different other afflictions. So that's, in short, my story.
Yeah, list their addiction, trauma, depression, anxiety. As you probably know, that's prevalent a lot among those in the ADHD community. So that hearing you list it all in a nutshell is pretty striking. But yeah, I think I have found the right person to talk to for this episode. My first question would be, how would you define what adverse childhood experiences are? What qualifies?
Yes, we call them ACEs. Yes, I think in my view, in my life and work experience, they are very common. I would find it very hard to believe, if not impossible, to imagine that someone is going through life untouched by trauma, by a traumatic experience, because most of us actually go through multiple ACEs. Yeah. That's the nature of life. In my view, ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, are one of the three forms of traumatic experiences. We have abuse, we have neglect, and we have ACEs. Now, in terms of abuse and neglect, it's quite easy to understand what they are, because everyone is familiar with physical, psychological, emotional, or sexual abuse, or institutional, or financial. Now we're expanding our perspective. Neglect is most of the time unintentional. It's coming from our parents or caregivers. But ACEs are treated somehow separate because they might involve some traumatic, some abusive or neglectful experiences, but they can be anything else. So they are overt experiences, events that are directed to us on a physical, psychological, emotional, sexual level. But they can also be covert events that are not really directed to us, but we witness them. So they somehow impact our life. So to give you an example, Sarah, imagine that you live with some parents that are very trapped in their drama, like I used to.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
with my father struggling with addiction and all sorts of other things, and my mother obsessed with him. Everyone has their own agenda. And us, we were sometimes neglected because they would fight, they would go out, they would do things. Imagine going through life as a child, living around an emotionally unavailable parents, parents that are not able to really sit with you and understand what you're feeling, what's going on with you. What if you witness maybe domestic abuse, like in my case, if you live with addict parents like mine, my father, if you go through separation and divorce, which happened to me as an adult. So obviously I passed that on to my son without even knowing. Also, we call adverse childhood experiences poverty, maybe inequality, discrimination, different other social events or social circumstances that the child is forced to witness and has an impact on their mental health. Because all of these adverse childhood experiences, what they do to us, they make us feel when we are little like we are not considered, like we are not seen, we are not important, our needs are not met, matter. And this is what's creating our core beliefs in life. And this is how we function as adults. So obviously it stays in our way of happiness and fulfillment. And I always say our stories have been written before we were born, because we are all affected way or another, to an extent or another, by this historic trauma that comes into our lives and extends through generations, from one generation to the other, in norms or subtle ways of behaving or thinking. And then without knowing, if we are to talk a little bit more in depth about trauma, our parents or even grandparents, if we live around them, without even knowing, without even being aware, they download in us, yeah, them and they, all of the other caregivers, teachers, whatever people take care of us, they download in us very painful genetic, karmic, evolutionary sort of memories. And all of these, what they do, they come in the form of stories from our ancestors, what we hear from the past, what happened in our barbaric past, because this is us humans. Everything from the evil, the most evil, to the most, you know, gorgeous human being, that's us. And then all of these experiences that the parents transmit to us in a way, they add to our individual trauma. So it's about what we witness ourselves when we grow up and what our parents or caregivers bring into our lives. And we all carry this heavy load, this luggage onto our back. And very often, in order to cope, we slip into addiction, we slip into anxiety, into depression. We find a tunnel, we find a corner where to sit so we don't have to engage with this pain, because very often we can't handle it. So it does affect our mental health. It does affect our overall well-being, but it doesn't have to stay like that. I'm a great believer in change and transformation. And every single second, it's a new life that we receive, and it's a new opportunity for us to actually change our life, to transform our life. My mantra is, I have the choice. We have the choice to continue to live in suffering, or we have the choice to awaken and start our journey within our journey of self-discovery, of healing and personal growth, and then live the life that we want to live, that we want to experience.
I love that. I love the way you explain it. I have a quick follow-up question. Would growing up during the pandemic count as an adverse childhood experience?
Yes.
Yes.
In my
in
view,
your view,
yes.
I agree. I was just curious while you were talking, but as far as moving forward, as far as choosing a better life and healing from this, is how would psychotherapy's role fit into that? And is it the only thing? What all goes into healing from this?
Oh, this is a brilliant question, Sarah. I absolutely love it. Therapy, psychotherapy is very important in treating anything. Yeah. And we have now over 400 different modalities, therapeutic modalities existent on earth that people actually practice. Now, all of them, they are not very different. They all draw from the three main schools of thought in psychology. We're talking about psychoanalysis, humanistic, cognitive behavior. Over the past decades, I was two decades ago, I was very passionate about CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. My first master course was in that. It was my first course after the psychologist university. And I really believed in CBT. And it's fantastic. It's a wonderful tool. So over the past decades, everyone is focusing on to that. Let's change the way we think so we can change our behavior and then we can change our lives. And it does work partially. And the new wave of CBT approaches with DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, and ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy, they are used in treating trauma in general. Then we have EDMR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And everyone can use anything, really. But in my view, they are supportive. They help you go through today.
Yes.
They deal with the symptom, but they don't resolve the cause. They don't resolve the underlying trauma. And it's been my privilege, I think, and my passion to actually go deeper within my own experience and with the experience of my clients as well, so we can actually resolve the problem. For me, conventional therapy hasn't been enough. I say it with respect towards all my therapists that I've had, because we do have our own therapists and our therapists have other therapists. So everyone is somehow entangled in this world. It is strange to say it myself as a therapist and counselor with background in clinical psychology, to say the therapy is not enough, because some people question, so if you don't believe in your work, so what are you doing? I do believe in my work, but I do believe in the work I do and in the perspective I'm taking to life. So I'm authentic and I want to encourage people to really believe that there is hope, there is transformation if they really want it. And I want to inspire them to actually get heavily involved in their healing process. I even set up a charity in London, in England and Wales, The Significant You, which is designed to actually empower people to take back responsibility, not responsibility in one word when they are responsible for something, but their responsibility in two different words. So you have the ability to respond to life, because in a way, it does not even matter what we are challenged with, what's coming or not. It's less important how we are challenged. It's more important how we respond to the challenge. And we can't really change the external world, but we can definitely change this internal life. Our mind, our bodies, our souls, the chemistry, how we function our hormonal levels.
I don't know if you've ever been put on a waiting list, but therapy is hard to come by these days. If you need therapy and you need someone to talk to, consider BetterHelp. I've been using BetterHelp on and off since the pandemic, and it's honestly been really helpful when I can't reach my normal therapist. To save 10% off your first month, visit betterhelp.com/ADHD adulting. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ADHD adulting.
So for me personally, the medical model is both helpful and unhelpful. It is helpful because it offers a little bit of support. So it's the beginning. It gives you an explanation of what actually happens to you. But it can be unhelpful because it's limiting. It's keeping us stuck in that kind of point of view, in that ideology, like this is the only truth. Like people are categorized healthy and unhealthy. Yeah. People with ADHD and no depression. And I think it's superficial for me now, having been through this world for 2 decades of psychology and psychotherapy. And I don't want anyone to feel trapped into a diagnostic identity, yeah, because sometimes we don't see anything else beyond that. So that's why I'm looking beyond labels, beyond, they create stigma anyway and rejection when people
Absolutely.
Think about diagnosis. Yeah. So even if I'm talking from the perspective of a professional now, even when we do a clinical diagnostic, we all follow the DSM-5, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. If you go across the world now, because I practice in my country, I practice in England, and now I'm starting, I practice somehow worldwide with the online work and everything.
Yeah.
And I'm connecting with peers from all over the world. I can see very easily, having been working with 49 different nationalities up to this yeah. moment in my life, I can see I'm talking to so many other practitioners that live in London that come from all over the world like me, I can see that even the diagnosis process is very arbitrary. It's culturally conditioned because in the West, we encourage autonomy, we encourage independence. So we treat our children differently. We wouldn't think that they have an attention deficit disorder in some parts of the world, but in others, because they children grow in collectivistic cultures and out there, the education is a bit more rigid. There are stricter social norms, maybe children behave differently. So in the way we, even us practitioners and clinicians do the diagnosis, there's a huge difference. So for me, I think essential is to encourage people to stay open. From the ADHD perspective, I think all of us experience, manifest some attention deficit at some point, especially in the new world with the technology and the digital world that is stimulating us, I don't know, 100, fold or even more, I think, because 50 years ago, we didn't have any of this, just able to cope with life. And now the new generations are required to actually function in a world that is so changing and so stimulating. And the brain hasn't had the time to adapt to this, to adjust to this. Evolutionary, if we hear from the neuroscientists, we need 10,000 years for the brain to actually catch up with massive changes and grow that kind of ability to function in a way that responds to all of these demands in a real time. So it's hard. So yeah, right. I've been a seeker. I'm a seeker myself. Mm-hmm. After studying psychology and psychotherapy for 15 years, after working for so many years, for me personally, the personal therapy, the studies, the clinical work haven't been sufficient. I had a rich life. I've been through all sorts of challenges on a personal level, on a social level, on a professional level. And I got myself trapped years back in the mental health corporate world in London. Just to share a little bit of my story.
Of course.
How I experienced psychotherapy myself and how I experienced this life in this modern world myself. And I was functioning in my tunnel mind automatically by default. See relationship challenges, a lot of work, some studies, you're always, you know, trying to upgrade yourself. Separation, divorce, then I've been widow, my husband died, 32-year-old son now, but obviously he was younger then. So adolescence, problems, then my mother died in my arms, a lot of stress going back to work. In my mid-40s, I was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. And that was the biggest awakening I've ever had. This is when I had to surrender to what was going on, really, not what was going on into my mind, into the reality.
Yeah. Right.
So I can share from all my heart that when I transcended that pain And and that anxiety that came with the cancer diagnosis, I actually transcended everything I knew. I let go of everything because I couldn't even think of myself. I stopped working as a therapist for a while during the chemo treatment and everything. I wasn't able to work. I was myself in therapy. Yeah. But I can say that it was then when I really started to open my eyes to a kind of a different world, a different kind of life. I stepped beyond the psychology into transpersonal psychology so I can understand the past, so I can understand what's been happening to me. How did I actually end up in this place? Then, obviously, I had to look through anthropology to understand the history of humanity. How did this happen? What happened with my parents? How the world shaped everyone, them, me, and so on. And then I had to accept that this is my condition. And I had a genetic mutation. I have BRCA1 genetic mutation, which is causing ovarian cancer. My mother died of that and myself breast cancer now. And I found it very difficult, really, to cope with this. But looking into epigenetics and understanding that the inner and the outer environment is actually impacting our health and we have the ability to control it, that's been absolutely fantastic. Then I looked around at my place in the universe. And I had to consider a little bit of quantum here in this universe, in this field of energy. I started to involve a little bit of energy medicine. How can I heal myself? How not being in the alignment has contributed to my illness? And everything else that I was exploring at that time, through my own challenge, helped me actually to integrate all of these learnings into something beautiful and consider then logotherapy. I'm starting to now find a little bit of meaning. Why do I have to go through this suffering? What's the point of this? What's the purpose of this? So this life experience is not being given to me just as a waste. It's been given to me for a reason. So I'm thinking how I can help other people now. I'm diving much deeper into the Eastern spirituality tradition so I can understand how can I be caring and compassionate and kind and understanding towards myself. Even if I realize now that I have somehow contributed to what's happening to me. And then how I'm bringing a little bit of forgiveness, how I'm becoming more compassionate towards myself. Forgive myself for all the missed opportunities, for all the turmoil that I brought into my own life through the choices that I made. Also forgive others that have hurt me in a way or another, that have wronged me. And then it's when you actually understand the transgenerational trauma and why these experiences have been part of your life and how do you make sense of them? And then it's then when you accept your reality and you actually realize that your parents have been trapped into their parents' drama as well. So we carry on doing the same thing from one generation to the other. And then you come into this beautiful moment when the forgiveness is actually helping you feel that deep inside of you. And then when you're healing, you're starting to live life from truth, from your own values. You don't care as much about others. Of course, you're very caring towards others, but you don't care about their point of view. You don't have to follow the crowds. You're more authentic. You can give up a little bit of that programming and the conditioning from the past. And this is when transformation actually happens. And it did transform my life. I survived that illness. And these 7 steps that I described, it's a framework now that I'm using in my own work because I've learned from my own experience being in therapy and going through change. And these days, obviously, I'm working with my happiness seekers or unhappy seekers that want to really transform their lives. So I guide them through this journey of personal self-discovery, healing and personal growth. And I offer them, I call it now, it's quite new, this concept. It's a new program that I'm developing, a 360-degree life makeover, because you really need to look back here and future, look down into your weakness, into your human nature, look into who you are today, and look up into your own resources and infinite possibilities that can, you know, that are part of your life and they can show up on your path. And it's about growing awareness, it's about repairing relationships, it's about really healing the wounds and then opening to happiness. I probably that I do my own podcast, they open to happiness. So to close this, it's been 2 decades. I've learned a lot. Psychotherapy is not enough in the conventional way. So if you choose one modality and expect a massive transformation, that's not happening and definitely not overnight. It's a process. Yeah. It's something that we engage with for the rest of our life. But if you really want to move from confusion, from trauma, from pain into clarity, happiness, direction, and fulfillment, then you need to turn within. And turning within involves modern psychology and psychotherapy, involves understanding how your entangled minds work, how the dynamic plays in the relation, what kind of values you have, how do you choose your life, what kind of choices you made in the past, and what do you want to choose maybe from now on, which way you're going. Understand these 7 steps of transformation and follow them, because otherwise there's no movement. I've tried many things for many clients to jump from one step to the other and didn't work. But if you really want a life makeover, it's very possible for me, for you, for everyone, as long as we stay involved with that process, take good care of ourselves, consider all of these disciplines outside psychology and psychotherapy, because they have informed our life. They tell us our story, who we really are. And it works really well in my practice. So that's why therapy in itself might need a little bit of extra help.
Yeah, I love it. I'm over here just like with the pom-poms cheering. I love it, because as far as my experience goes, I went a very long time thinking psychotherapy was the answer and the only answer. And a lot of the stuff that you were just explaining are proving to be true in my own experience. And so I love hearing you talk about that, because it's reaffirming. But I love that. And I want to hear more about this framework. Where can the listeners access more information about you and the framework that you're describing here?
Everyone can find me on my website. That's the first place, nicolettaporojanu.com. If they want to find out a bit more about the way I work and how learning from my own personal, social, and professional experience has helped me really develop this kind of perspective to life, which I call an expansive psychotherapy. So we need to expand on the traditional psychotherapy. They can go onto my website at nicolettaporojanu.com/resources. And I have about 5 or 6 resources available on relationships, the 7 steps of transformation, the 3 entangled minds, very interesting concept that is helping everyone to really come to terms with what's going on in this noisy world in our brain. So a lot of information is there, but I'm also on Facebook a little bit on social media. I'm very trapped with the charity and my clinical practice, but I'm trying my best. And at the moment I'm writing my book as well. I'm doing this podcast, the Open to Happiness podcast. And I'm doing a digital course. I want to put everything in a digital course for people that can't go to therapy, or maybe they have been to therapy, but they haven't found it that helpful. So I want to give them everything so they can do their own self-therapy. Even if they see someone, they can still do their self-therapy in between those sessions. So they have a deeper framework that will help them to actually achieve whatever they want to achieve. So nicolettaporojanu.com/resources, available for everyone.
Awesome. And for our listeners, all of these items will be linked in the show notes if you need to find anything we've discussed in this episode. Nicoletta, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciated this conversation. And
thank you.
Have a wonderful day. Take care.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Sarah, and for reaching out. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking with you. Have a lovely day yourself and your listeners. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.